perfectly clear, I love England and I love British people, but the weather sucks much of the time. I'm on Hailing Island visiting my mum for her birthday, while Los Angeles, where I live most of the year, is gearing up for the Oscars on March the 4th. So I'm chatting with someone who knows a lot about movies. The guest on this episode of The Chat with Claire Fordham is screenwriter Stephen Rogers, who wrote top films including Hope Floats, Stepmom, Kate and Leopold, and P.S. I Love You. Now he's in the spotlight again, having written and produced the biographical dark comedy I, Tonya, for which he received Golden Globe and BAFTA nominations for his original screenplay. He wrote the part of Tonya Harding's mother for his best friend Alison Janney. She's the red-hot favourite to win the Oscar, having won every other Best Supporting Actress category this award season, including a BAFTA on Sunday. Cinema audiences, critics and I loved I, Tonya. Here's the seriously funny and smart Stephen Rogers to tell you how I, Tonya got made, how he feels about being hot again after his agent told him he was cold, and the ups and downs of screenwriting. We recorded this chat in Stephen's Santa Monica home, so please ignore the slight traffic noise. Put the kettle on, Tiago.
We simply must applaud them, the Chat Podcast with Claire Fordham, Keir Hall and Chad Hall.
Easy, easy.
And I think we need to make it clear who Walter is.
Walter wears the pants in the family. Mm-hmm. He's my 4-year-old Labradoodle.
He's the size of a horse.
He gets a lot of attention.
He does.
As you would say, I am the plus one in my own life.
Thank you for doing that, making a reference to my book, Plus One, A Year in the Life. Now, you're probably thinking, this is embarrassing. I haven't bought her a present. I am asking you to cast your mind back to 1999, when you used to have an annual Christmas Eve party, I think it was, when you invited people, your friends, to bring over
the worst gift.
And so I wanted to bring you...
The worst gift that you got this year? Oh my gosh.
Now, what you do is you put it on the inside of your toilet. It's like a night light.
But why do you want to see it?
Because if it's the middle of the night and you go and it's dark, oh my God, and you go and it changes colour. Now, I remember who was there. 1999, three names to you.
Okay.
Your friends. There was you. You had four buddies.
There were a lot of people there.
There were, but there were some that I remember more than others.
Okay.
Actress. Alison Janney.
Yes.
Actress Octavia Spencer.
Very possibly.
I think he was an actor then, but he's now... Then he went on to be a director, Tate Taylor.
Yes, he was there.
And you.
Yes.
You'd already had success that we'll talk about, but I think it's a wonderful thing that your friends all that time, and they hadn't achieved anything.
For the longest time, Alison and I were the only ones who had hit, and so we had to pay for everything. Because that's what you do. Whoever has the money pays. And that was fine. And then there was this one year where everybody turned 40 and they all hit. The same year, Octavia, Melissa McCarthy, my friend Bradford, the manager for musicians, and he kept saying, I've got this 18-year-old, she's going to be huge next year. I've got this 19-year-old next year. I've got this 20. And we're all saying, Bradford, when is this Katy Perry going to hit?
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, it was just this one year, and everybody hit big time. You know, my friend Jim Rash won the Oscar the same year that Octavia won the Oscar. It was my friend Brunson was nominated for the Oscar for producing Help.
Tate directed it.
Yes.
I mean,
it was a crazy year.
Yeah.
And Alison and I, we sat everybody down and we said, we're not paying for anything, and we're not paying for 10 years. And we're not kidding.
And are you still not paying?
I'm still not paying.
Okay, good for you. Yeah. Which is surprising, because you're probably the hottest right now, along with Alison. And although Octavia too, of course.
And Melissa McCarthy.
I didn't know she was a power, but she wasn't at that party.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
wow. She could
She's
been.
Extraordinary.
I think I have a picture of her with a big Chucky doll.
Wow.
Which is
so
talented. A bad gift.
I mean, there's no luck involved here with these people. You're all supremely.
Well, it's also persistence, because a lot of people give up by the time they're 40.
Right.
You know, and they didn't.
I know. It's extraordinary. So it's probably not luck that Alison is starring, or co-starring, I guess she is, in your latest film.
It is luck, because I've tried to have Alison in my movies for years and years and years.
She turned you down.
No. I didn't have any say. Because if they were studio movies and a director comes on and they'll just do whatever they want. Or the studio will say, this person's worth more, and then that's it. On this one, I wrote it as a spec script, which meant that nobody paid me to write it. And so if people wanted it, hopefully more than one would, and there'd be heat on it, so then I could make some demands.
And did that happen?
It did happen. There was a lot of heat on the movie when it went out on the script. And the first thing that I said was, Allison Janney is playing the part that I wrote for her, and I want it in writing. Or it was a deal breaker.
And you, are you serious? You would not have made the film if Allison hadn't played the movie?
I would not have took that meeting with that producer. Okay. I just felt that, you know, someone will say yes.
You know, and you were right, because she's brilliant.
Well, I actually made that demand before Allison had even read the script or said she would do it. But it takes Allison sometimes a long time to read something, and we didn't have the time, so I just said, no, she's attached. It was
so
a gamble.
Lied. You did the classic.
I gambled.
Okay.
I would prefer to say.
Okay.
I gambled. I said, okay, she's attached before she had read it. So okay, that's not a lie. I didn't say that.
Okay.
I said.
And so she read the script, and then she said.
She said, why would you think? She was like, yes, I'll definitely do it. It's unlike anything I've played before. You know, but I mean, why would you think that this was the one for me?
Oh.
Because she plays such a horrible person with a, with, you know, a, she's very abusive, and she has a bowl haircut and a half fur and a bird on her shoulder. And so I sent her a video of the real woman who had that bowl haircut and big glasses and the fake fur and the bird on the shoulder. She said, okay.
And she is astonishing. And this is the first time, I think, that you've actually been involved as a producer.
Yeah, I was an executive producer on my last movie, but that was really just in order to be able to learn how. And I felt like a tourist there, to be totally truthful.
Which one was that?
It's called Love the Coopers.
Okay.
Not my title. But, so I learned a lot there. And then on this one, I knew that the tone of it was very tricky and very specific, and I knew it would never survive the studio system. And so I knew I wanted to do it independently, which I've never done before. I've always worked in the studio system.
And right, successfully.
And with a lot of frustration, you know. I mean, I've been lucky enough to have movies made, but I always felt they were very watered down versions of what I wrote. But then on this one, I wanted a seat at the table, and I wanted to be, have more of an experience than I've had in the studio system. And I thought I could have it in the independent world, knowing nothing about the independent world. This was just my guess.
So it was, this all started with you, didn't it? Well, it all started with Tonya Harding's people bashing the knee of
Nancy Kerrigan. Yeah.
But how did you get, and this, that was 20 years ago, how did you hear about it?
I did it. I mean, I'd heard the story, you know, back then, but my niece, Kanani, my niece was over, and we happened to see this documentary on 30 for 30 called The Price of Gold that Nanette Burstein did on Tonya Harding. And elements of the story that I picked up on about class in America and the disenfranchised and the things that we tell women they're supposed to be, and about truth and the perception of truth and how we tell ourselves what we need to tell ourselves in order to be able to live with ourselves. And I, for me, the jumping off point for anything I write is what's it about. And this just seemed like there was a lot to write about, but it was all framed in a whole lot of crazy, which I thought was
so much crazy.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. So I went onto the Tonya Harding website to see if the life rights were even available. And I called the number for her agent, and it was a Motel 6. And I just thought, I'm so in. I'm going. And I tracked down Tonya Harding, and I tracked down Jeff Galuli.
Bit stalky.
Or, you know, when I was a reporter, even though I'm not a reporter. I've never interviewed anybody. I tracked them down, and I paid for it myself, and I interviewed them. And when I did, their stories were so wildly contradictory.
Do you believe?
I believe that that's what they believe. Yeah. I believe that that's what they told themselves in order to live with themselves. Just like Sean the bodyguard told everyone around him that he worked for overseas dictators and had assassins at his fingertips, you know. But when I saw it, I thought it was because he was 400 pounds, he lived in his parents' basement, and he was lonesome. And I just thought, well, that's actually really, it's moving, you know. But the... No, people don't go that deep, you know, especially that was the first time there was a 24-hour news cycle and they had to fill it, and they cared less about being accurate and more about filling it. So we got a not very nuanced picture, you know, one was the princess, one was the villain. You know, and
it's a wonderful film. I obviously I was chuffed to watch it because you wrote it, but the acting is outstanding, the writing is outstanding, and the direction is outstanding. Yes, everything is, and it's a terrifically entertaining movie, which is what going to the movie should be all about. You go, oh my gosh, and even if you think you know the story, there's so many aspects to it, and I don't want to give too much away, apart from to say that she might have had the worst mother ever.
I never interviewed Tanya's mother because Tanya said she didn't know if her mother was dead or alive, didn't care, and didn't know what name she was using.
But with your investigative skills, you could have located
her. No, I couldn't find her, and so I just wrote the part for Allison. Huh? You know, and I thought she was probably dead. And
is she?
Maybe a month ago, there's a show on television called Inside Edition. Mm. And they found her and they interviewed her. And I'm telling you, my email just went crazy. And I was really nervous because I thought, oh my God, what's she going to say? Is she going to, you know, what's she going to do? And then we watched it, and you can watch it on YouTube because it's out there now. I mean, it's kind of more of the same. You know, she says, I hit her one time with a hairbrush. That was it. I gave her a little swat, you know. But they did show her a picture of Allison dressed up like her back then. And she says, that's supposed to be me? That looks nothing like me. And of course, it looks just
exactly like her.
Like,
you know. So now you are enjoying the fruits of your labors.
Yes.
Because it's a success. And if I may use...
Are you allowed to swear on the show?
Yes.
I am loving the fuck out of it.
Great. Because you're hot again. And I'm not wanting to embarrass you in any way by saying that, of course, you've been hotter than a hot thing with added hotness as a screenwriter. You started out with Kate and Leopold, and you did Hope Floats. You did P.S. I Love You. The king of rom-com writing. And then I bumped into you outside Gelson's and I said, hey, Stephen, how are you doing? He said, well, I've got this. And then you told me that your agent had referred to you as not hot.
Cold.
He said you were cold.
I'm cold. Yeah. I've been hot and I've been cold. I can tell you hot is much better, much friendlier.
So this got the, it was your agent who said, Stephen, you're cold right now.
He was my agent at the time.
Right, so has he called you to say...
He has.
Has he tried to get you back?
No.
Did you leave him because he said you were cold?
No. That's not why I left him. I stayed with him, like an idiot.
So does it feel extra specially good to be hot when you've been told you're cold? You've been hot.
Yes, it does, because... That's the best kind of revenge, is where you don't have to do anything mean and you can just say, told you. No, that actually is delicious. I'm not even going to lie, you know. But it's also, I know, temporary. You know, it's like you're hot, you're cold, you're hot, you're cold. I mean, it's a roller coaster. You're up and you're down.
Are you working on anything right now? The next thing? You must be, I guess.
Yeah, I'm working on Becoming Impossible. I think that's going to be the next thing.
I think you're too young for that. It's not until you're 80.
Yeah.
So you haven't got something that you're working on?
I did. I am working on something, but it's for the theater.
What?
I wrote a movie called Flora Plum a long time ago. And we almost made it three different times, and Jodie Foster was going to direct it, and it fell apart three different times. And it took place in a circus in the 1930s, and someone approached me to turn it into a musical for the West End. And I thought that could be very original because I've never seen a musical with Cirque du Soleil in it. So I thought, well, let's see what that...
P.T. Barnum, that was it. Wasn't that... That was about The Greatest Showman.
That's a movie.
Yeah, but it wasn't...
They had something called Barnum, but that
yeah,
was...
Yeah, Barnum.
This was...
Well, this is very exciting. Is it different writing for the screen than for theatre?
Totally different.
But have you had to take notes or do a course?
I've never taken a course in my life. I was just too lazy. I just thought, I can do that.
And how did you do that?
Well, my father produced regional theater.
Okay.
For a living. And so we would move around wherever he had a season. So it was like being an army brat, but with theater. You know, which was a ridiculous way to grow up.
So you started in writing with no knowledge of writing. You didn't study screenwriting either.
No.
And yet you had the first thing you wrote, Kate and Leopold, was picked up by a studio.
Yeah.
Was a massive, it was Hugh Jackman and Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
You bloody. I mean, people are going to hate you.
Of course they're going to hate me.
And then you stuck.
But I was so young that I didn't know. I mean, I was 20 nothing, you know. I wanted to be an actor, and they didn't want me. And so I thought, well, I'll just write my own thing, and I'll be in it. Because, you know, I didn't know that everybody did that. I thought it was my genius idea. I didn't know anything. And the first thing I wrote was Kate Leopold. And people were all excited because they're like, the first thing you wrote, you sold. But I was so young that I thought, well, of course.
Can I ask how much you got for it? Can you remember?
I think they optioned it first for like, I think it was $75,000. Which to me was, I've never seen $75,000. But I mean, I just thought, well, of course they optioned it. That's why I wrote it. Like, I didn't know, you know.
And but have you had disappointment and rejection? What, Flora Plum, for a start, got...
Yeah, that didn't happen. That got a lot of attention, but Jodie Foster had it for like 10 years. So I was cool by association for 10 years.
But now you're hot.
No, but I was cool, like...
Yeah, oh, you're yeah,
so,
yeah, I know.
Like the Jets and the Sharks.
Yeah, I've got it, sorry. And I'd like to talk about your discipline as a writer. Do you have a set time when you like to be at your desk writing?
No, I'm so... It gets harder, you know, once you have money in the bank and live at the beach.
Yeah, fear of poverty is a great motivator.
It is. And when you're trying to make something of yourself, I think you work a whole lot harder. Or when you're trying to reinvent yourself, you know, you work harder. But at first what I did after Kate Leopold, and then the next one I wrote was Hope Flows. But I didn't know if I could do it again. I didn't know I could do it the first time. And I also had some money in the bank, which I'd never had before. And I thought, well, I'm just young right now. I don't want to just look back and think, oh, I worked. So what I did originally was I said, I'm just going to do 3 pages a day, every day. And if it takes all day, it takes all day. If it takes an hour, I have the rest of the day free. So that's pretty much how I wrote Hope Flows. And that was very doable. Maybe I didn't do it every day. Maybe, you know, God took Sunday off. So I probably took Sunday off too. But then I got, you know, lazier and lazier, frankly. And on the Tonya Harding one, I said, okay, I'm just going to do a scene a day. And if it's like a 5-page scene, it's a 5-page scene. And if it's a quarter of a page, that's it. And I'll stop. You know, but it did. It propelled me forward. So that's what I do.
Keep calm and chat on.
I wanted to talk about the producing side, because you wore that hat this time.
Yeah.
And you said to me when we took Walter for a walk before we sat down to chat, and you were determined that it wouldn't be part of the studio system, because you wanted control and you wanted to be a producer and you wanted to be part of the whole thing.
I wanted the experience, absolutely.
And so you enjoyed it?
I loved it. I'll never go back. Mm. I'll just go forward. You know, so I won't go back to just being a writer. It's like, no, I'd much rather have more control over it, and no one can rewrite me, you know. I mean, I had that in my contract because the script had some heat on it. So I could say, Allison is playing the part I wrote for her, and you can't rewrite me without my consent. But here's the irony, and I hate irony when it's directed right at me. I didn't need it. I finally got it in my contract, and I didn't need it because the other producers and Craig... And they all had my back on this. You know, we all saw the movie the same way.
And you must be thrilled with the outcome, because Craig did a terrific job directing.
I am.
Did you settle on him to direct it?
Well, first, what happens is the script went out on spec, and then you meet with all these different producers and try and figure out who you're going to partner up with, which is tricky, because everybody tells you what they think you want to hear, but you don't know if they're telling the truth. You know, and then I narrowed it down, and I went with Brian Unkles.
The producer?
Yes. He worked with Nina Jacobson, and he's the guy who found The Hunger Games. Yeah. And then he left to start his own company, and I was pretty much the first. He hadn't really done anything yet. And I had gotten the script to Margot's people.
Why? So you would always imagine her being in it?
No. What happened was I was talking to my neighbor, Jill McElroy, who came to a party at my house once and never left. Just heard me talking about Tonya Harding and Jeff Galuli, and she said, oh, let me read the script when you're done. So I had just given it to her, and she read it, and she said, you know who will be really good is Margot Robbie. And I was like, well, we're not there yet. I'm still looking for producers. And, you know, she said, well, can I give it to her? Because she works for Margot's management company. And I just thought, well, can I stop you? You know, I've got to find a producing partner, you know, and we got to find a director first. And the day after I picked Brian Unkles to partner up with, we got a phone call from Margot's people saying, would you meet with her? She wants to do it. So then, you know, we met with Margot fairly quickly. I mean, I could tell right away. I knew that she was really great with comedy and really great with drama. But when I was talking to her, and I would mention my interviews with Tanya, she had this intensity behind her eyes. And I thought, that's interesting, because when I talked to the real Tanya Harding, and we're talking about the triple and nailing it, she had the exact same intensity. And I thought, wow, that's another sign, you know.
You were telling me when we were walking, Walter, that how impressed you were with Margot when she turned up fully prepared, and how you shot it out of sequence, and yet she'd still...
Yeah, we shot, I think, 260-something scenes in 31 days. And we all took minimum. We all took scale so we could have control over it. And she would modulate her voice ever so slightly, depending on what age she was, until she's 44 and has a totally different... And the same thing with her physicality. When she's younger, she's not as... she's a lot more vulnerable. And she's not as defiant and closed off as she gets throughout the movie. But we shot out of order. So there were days when she was 23, days when she was, I mean, the same day she would be 17, then she'd be 20, then she'd be 15. And you know, and she would modulate her physicality and her voice and everything and do it with such ease and so little fuss, no fuss, that you sort of took it for granted. And it wasn't until I really saw her on film that I thought, holy cow, look what she did, all out of order and all jumbled.
And she learned to skate.
And she could skate, but she couldn't stop. I believe that's what she said.
I think she's in with a real chance of the Oscar for the best actress.
Margot plays her from 15 to 45.
And she has all the range of emotions. And Alison has got to be a shoo-in. I mean, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, I knew Alison would be all that. I wrote it for her, so I knew what she liked. I know what she doesn't like. I can do so I could write those lines for her.
Do you like doing that, writing for people?
Yes, yes. It takes a lot of the difficulty out.
I just had a brilliant idea for your next film. You option my book.
Claire.
Yes, and you have Alison and Octavia playing the Fordham sisters.
Right.
It'll be brilliant. And you know what it means when you do an English accent and you're
an Oscar.
Oscar nomination.
You bet.
It's just a no-brainer. And so, does this mean you're going to be going to London? Or you don't have to be in London if it's West End or Flora Plum?
I suppose I'll have to be. If it goes, you know, if anything happens. You know,
so how does that work? It's theatre. You have to get a producer, someone to fund you.
Yeah. And a composer. But it's all being worked out.
And you'd write the book?
Yes.
This is very cool. Well, you could go and see if Andrew Lloyd Webber. Don't mess around. Start at the top.
I don't think he'd be right.
Okay. Who would be right then?
He's too earnest.
He is earnest. Yes, he is.
And this is...
But I'm trying to think. Who are modern writers?
We're talking.
So you're having meetings?
Yeah.
You know why? Because you're hot. Well, thank you for talking to me. I'm glad you're still here at the beach where you belong.
Yes, you've got same house, different dog.
Yeah, Walter, Jake. Dear Jake.
And he joined the majority.
Oh.
Brought me to my knees. That was the hardest thing to go through.
Yeah. So how long did you wait till you got Walter?
I waited about 2.5 years.
Oh, okay.
I was pretty heartbroken.
I know.
You know.
I know. Yeah, we've got another dog as well after Muttley. In fact, you know, we don't have to talk about that because people won't care about us living on the street, but they were happy days with the dogs.
Oh, yeah. Everyone used to have a dog. Now everybody has babies.
I know. What's that all about?
Give me dogs. I need to.
We simply must applaud them, the chat podcast with Claire Fordham. Keep calm and chat on.
I told you Stephen Rogers was smart and funny. There was so much gold in there for filmmakers, writers and film fans. Please share this podcast with anyone you know who loves movies or writing.
We simply must applaud them.
Now then, while I was in London last week, I interviewed comedy legend Tracy Ullman. On the next Chat with Claire Fordham, hear Tracy Ullman doing some of her best impressions as she talks about growing old with dignity and her brilliant career in film and television. Until next time, thanks for listening, keep calm and chat on.
We simply must applaud them, the Chat Podcast with Claire Borden. Keep calm and chat on.
The Chat with Claire Fordham is an M Squared production.